I appreciate you adjusting that for me. The sound here is really phenomenal, and so I was going to adjust it anyways, but only because I have a hard time looking at my notes when it was a little lower, and I realized that the first time I was here and started getting a little frazzled because of having to move around. Can I move this? So appreciate that. Well, during the Feast of Tabernacles in Branson, Missouri, I usually serve as the business manager with Mr. Blackwell and in the business office. And a part of my normal routine right after the Feast of Tabernacles, I stop by the UPS store in Branson, Missouri to send back the business supplies to headquarters. And it's no exception this year, and usually this goes pretty smoothly, no problems. We were sitting there in line waiting on one lady. She was delaying a little bit, and you could hear her in the front, but she was getting frustrated and angry with the clerk that was helping her, the UPS clerk. And she was accusing the clerk of false advertisement. You are UPS, it is false advertising, and I want this service to be done. She says, ma'am, we do offer what you're stating in a way, but we don't offer what you want done. So it's not false advertisement, it's just we can't specifically do what you're requesting. Well, I want this particular thing bound. I want it binding. You said you do binding. And they said, we do binding. We do spiral binding of paper. Well, I want my Bible bound. I want you all to bind my Bible. This is an old, this is a really old Bible. And of course, you need a specialty store. She says, ma'am, I don't know the first thing about binding a Bible. I don't know how to do that. We would if we could, but we can't, so I'm sorry. But she just kept complaining the whole time. Of course, she had other business to do and complain. She just could not get over that. She wanted her Bible bound at the UPS store. So it just seemed like, in listening to the lady, it seemed like she was the type of person that would probably complain at most anything and continue to complain. And if they were to accept the Bible and bind it for her and put the spirals in, I think she would complain about that, as most probably would. But, she just had a kind of an attitude of negativity and complaining. And this is fairly normal behavior, what we are used to in this society. We know we don't live in during the millennium, that Christ is not ruling right now. We know Satan is the god of this world, and that there are certain attitudes that are being promoted. And so it's not uncommon to see somebody complaining at a sales clerk or complaining loudly, vocally complaining, being negative. I went ahead and did a little research on complaints, and they had a short list of top 10 reasons for complaining. One that made the list is that the internet is too slow. The internet is too slow. The second is the drive-through restaurants are too slow. That's a big one that people complain about. Fast food is not fast enough. I notice sometimes if I have to go through pretty quick, if we're not through the line in literally 5 minutes, there's a problem. This is a big problem. Complaints about the weather, is too hot or is too cold. And in any building, the thing that can really get somebody in trouble is a thermostat. You go up 2 degrees on somebody or down 2 degrees, you could have half the congregation divided. Then you have complaints about the toilet seat being left up. Put the toilet seat down. So I think men should complain about the other way. Make sure that it's down. No, not recommended. Okay. Monday morning work week. That made the top 10. Complain about the Monday morning work week. Another one is complain about movie spoilers. Yeah, if somebody dare accidentally let something out for a movie, you better beware. There is fury to be found in that. And then my favorite is complaining about other people complaining. You just can't stand other people that complain all the time. Whoa. I think we could all say just complaining about people in general. But in case you haven't noticed, we do live in a complaining society, a negative mindset. And we know why. We understand, as was mentioned in the sermonette, that we are to be lights in a dark world. Me and Jonathan, we were out visiting one day, and we decided we wanted to catch the Chiefs game, part of the Chiefs game on the way home. And so we went to a place and asked them if they could sit us next to a, you know, an, a place that has a TV that's close by so we could watch the game. And so he said he was going to try to accommodate. So we sat there. There's a couple that were there before us, and we were both sitting patiently waiting. And then a party of four or five came in, and they put their name in. Well, they got them in right away. And the couple that was there sitting looked at us like, what in the world is going on? This is discrimination. And we just sat there, and then another family came in, and they sat them right away. And that was enough. So she had it. She went to the front counter and started complaining, and what is going on? And he said, well, it's just the tables that we have available for your smaller party. We actually had some bigger tables available. And then a couple more came in, they set them. And then finally they set the couple that was waiting. And so it was just me and Jonathan waiting. We felt like everybody was being served but us. And another couple came in, they got seated right away, and it was like, okay, maybe we are invisible. I'm about to go up there and say something myself, you know. I'll give it five more minutes, and if nothing is said, then I'll say something. Well, about 3 minutes went by, and he called us up, and he gave us a really nice table, really big view of the TV. So he was trying to find us an awesome spot. So, and we're really thankful. Said appreciate that, you know. And then he came out and gave us some free appetizers. What's this for? I'm just so thankful that you didn't bite our heads off. That was the word he used. Thankful you didn't bite our heads off. We were just looking at each other like, well, that's kind of nice, but. Well, you know, we just got rewarded for not doing something, just for not complaining. It's one thing to do something and go above and beyond, and hey, you know, we really appreciate that, and we'd like to, you know, reward you because of that. But I just almost found it comical, because we didn't complain, we received a blessing. And that just kind of shows the day and age that we live in. We can truly stand out as a light just by not complaining, not disputing. It's exactly what is told in Philippians 2 and verse 14. If we'll turn to Philippians 2 and verse 14. Philippians 2 and verse 14. It says, do all things without complaining and disputing. And the word here for complaining and disputing literally means without grumbling, without arguing. Without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. And so by not complaining, doing things without complaining, without disputing, we will stand out involuntarily as a light in this world. That's what we're told. That is because we live in a world that complaining, negativity, is the norm. Really, complaining and negativity, that attitude, is such a toxic attitude. It's such a toxic spirit, because it's almost, you know, it's almost contagious in a way. If you're around somebody a lot and that just complains and just negative, it can almost rub off on you without you thinking about it. I think it's, you know, it's kind of contagious too, almost like the common cold. You know, it's it almost seems like it could rub off on you if you're not being careful. And similar to a common cold too, if you see somebody sniffling or whatever, you get really close to that person. It's like if you notice that, really close to that person. No, you kind of stand off a little bit at a distance. And, you know, one that complains, it's not as if somebody just gravitates towards this individual. If somebody's going to have friends, they must show themselves friendly and have a smile, be kind. But this complaining negativity, it's really a toxic attitude. But, you know, one individual that I used to work with at Social Security Administration, that was his perspective. His overall mindset was just complaining all the time. Life was so unfair in every circumstance, no matter what. And he was always complaining about something. It was if it wasn't the boss, it was a coworker, and if it wasn't a coworker, it was the public who was coming in, and if it wasn't that, then it was what was going on outside. And you know, the first couple weeks that I was there, it's like, you know, you try to maintain a positive attitude, and after 2, 3, 4 years around it, you're just like, you know, I mean, at first I would be the ear, I would listen to him and try to be really respectful, and then after a while, it's just like, you're draining me. I didn't realize to what extent until, you know, I changed careers and got away from that, and it was like, whoa, what a breath of fresh air. It's like, you know, Katie doesn't complain at me near as much as that guy. No, she doesn't. Sorry. But, you know, it was great to get away from that. But really, who do you want to be around? Who would you like to be around? Somebody who is a Pollyanna type attitude, everything is wonderful, everything is great, you know, or somebody that's like Eeyore in the cartoon Winnie the Pooh. Eeyore, you know, I never really understood, how did he have so many stuffed animal friends? I mean, wouldn't, just somebody that's complaining all the time. Why did he have so many friends? But it didn't matter what it was. It was always, you know, here's some ice cream. You're, oh, wow, thanks for the ice cream. I'm sure I'm going to spill it on me. It's nothing could make him happy. There was always a complaint. But who do we gravitate towards? Do people gravitate towards us? Are we friendly? Do we smile? Or do we complain? Are we unthankful? Are we negative? We have to be very careful that we do not become a part of that crowd, the negative. We have to make sure that we aren't giving in to that complaining spirit that is being promoted by, as we know, Satan, the devil. So again, it's not easy to do because this is what is around us. This is what we are used to. This is what we see on a daily basis. I mean, there are dedicated shows on TV specifically for debating, specifically for arguing. Of course, more so in the political ventures of things. Debating, news channels, arguing is welcome. So maybe you say, I'm not going to watch the TV today. I'm going to go for a car ride. And then people complain at you while you're driving. This happened to me the other day. You know, I leave. I'm passing an individual on the left side in the fast lane. And the guy looks over and he's complaining about me not passing him fast enough. Hurry up, pass me already, because I'm gradually going by him. But I still can't figure out what's the point of complaining about somebody passing you. I'm still going to pass you, just in my due time. I don't know, I haven't figured that one out. So I'm going to choose to ignore it, turn on the radio, and then it's 610 radio about the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's about complaining. It's how bad they are. And, you know, they could play a perfect game, but it's awful, but you get the point of what I'm saying. It's seemingly everywhere we turn is that there's something to be said about complaining. Again, I do listen to those critics, you know, on the sports talk radio, and I think they should have a day where they get the media out there and just give them some helmets, give them the pads, and say, look, if they're so bad, just go ahead and spar with them and see what happens. They might stop complaining. You're like, that was a pretty hard hit, you know. I think they are pretty good. So once a year, that's it. And see if the criticizing stops. But anyway, so what do you think I plan to speak on today? Is it complaining, negativity? Actually, none of those particular things, but in a way, those things. Today I would like to speak on thankfulness. Thankfulness. Because that is the attitude that really does combat a attitude of complaining, negative attitude, thankfulness. This is to be our overall mindset. Are we thankful people? Not just once a year, but throughout the entire year. As we heard in the In Accord, if you all were able to listen to that by Mr. Kylo, he did mention a little bit about being thankful at the beginning and at the end. And how it's just not once a year once a day, but we strive to have this as a part of our entire lives. So it has to do with our overall mindset. Are we thankful? Are we content? Are we happy? Or do we share in an attitude that we are told to beware of during the end times? 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, and I believe that he went to this yesterday too. I did have this already in my notes, but we will turn here. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, an attitude that's going to be prevalent during the end days or in the last days. But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come, stressful times will come. And why? Why will it be stressful? For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. So why is it going to be so stressful? Attitudes. It's a prevailing attitude that will be recognized. Disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. This is what the attitude will be in the last days. This is what we are to avoid. It's easy to recognize what we live in and the world that we live in, because the attitudes are listed there. But the attitude of unthankful, being unthankful, it's easy to recognize. Again, when I worked for Social Security Administration, I had a couple jobs. In my first job that I had, I was on the post-entitlement side. So this was those that were already on benefits, those who were receiving, they were already entitled to those benefits. And if they would have told me what I was going to have to deal with at the beginning, I don't know if I would have gone that route, even though it was a good job after I got out of that first portion of the career. But that was the post-entitlement side. And, you know, you get cussed at, screamed at, you're just dealing with the public for those that were already entitled. Then I got offered a new position, and that was in the initial claims-taking unit, and that was as a social insurance specialist. I thought, well, what's it going to be like on this particular avenue? Will it be any different? These are individuals who are applying for benefits for the first time. And it was so much different. These are individuals who are needing the benefit, have not been approved, and it was so different. They were much more humble, much more in need, or hoping they would get approved, and it was just a totally different attitude. But once they got on benefits, that was when things changed. What they had was never enough, so some would just call to complain, and some didn't want to adhere to the rules or whatnot. But it seemed like it was not enough. Whatever they had was not enough. Where does this attitude come from? Where does this attitude stem from? What is the core of this attitude of not having enough? Never enough. Ezekiel 28 and verse 12. Ezekiel 28:12. Who is the being who was given much, but it was not enough, wanted more? Ezekiel 28 and verse 12, so we have a spirit being typed by the human king of Tyre. And of course we know this is Lucifer that it is talking about prior to becoming Satan the devil. It says, "You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty." How many of us could say that? A seal of perfection, just full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. That's amazing. "You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. The sardis, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created." You can't probably imagine how beautiful he is. "You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you. Prior to that point, he had so much. He was given so much. But that changed with a certain attitude. We'll find that in Isaiah 14 and verse 12. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. An attitude of not having enough, wanting more, the need for more. In this case, position, power, authority. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit in the mount of the congregation on the furthest side of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High. Was he self-absorbed? Was it all about self and what he wanted? What he deserved, and he deserved to have the authority of God in his mind. So it's interesting. I. There, of course, pride being that root. But pride does work with an unthankful attitude. It's never enough. I deserve more. What I have is not good enough. God, who gives everything, who gives all blessings, who created Lucifer, that was not enough. For God, who gives us all good things, are we thankful? Or is it not enough? We have to make sure that we avoid that attitude, which is the influence of this world. Lucifer lost sight of who God was, who he is, in comparison to who he is. The greatness of God in comparison to what he was, a created by God. He lost respect for God's power, his majesty, and all that God had given him. And you think about human nature at its finest, that we all are susceptible to that, that attitude. If you think about the children of Israel, they had been given so much. They had been given miracle after miracle, deliverance after deliverance, but it was never enough. They were thankful, but it was short-lived thankfulness. They would lose sight of God and what he was doing for them. Think about the very beginning. Please deliver us. And he was going to, they received a deliverer. Hooray! And they're thankful. We're going to have a deliverer. We're going to be delivered. And then Pharaoh changes the situation. You're going to work harder. And then, oh no, look what you've done. He's not really going to deliver us. But then he delivers them. So hooray! He delivered us. But then they were at the Red Sea and they were trapped in their mind. Well, God has just brought us here to die. The situation changed. They were tested. And as it got difficult, they were not as thankful. They forgot what God was doing. He delivered them. They were thankful, but it was short-lived. They were short on water. For 3 days, they did not have water. And we can think about it ourselves. We start to worry after 3 days of no water or having bitterness in the water, not able to drink it. But God made it sweet. He made the water sweet, another miracle. He delivered them. They needed food. He provided manna, but they wanted meat. They were thankful for the manna, but after boiling it and stewing it or whatever they did over and over again, that was not enough. They wanted something different. He provided them shoes for a lifetime. These were the Air Nikes that would last forever. Now, the sandals that would not wear out. They had sandals that would not wear out, but they insisted that they go back to Egypt. They complained. Now, ultimately, where did that lack of thankfulness lead them to? And this is something we'll look at a little later on as well, but the ultimate is that unthankfulness, that losing sight of God and what he was doing for them, it led to idolatry. And it's hard to think that it got to that point. All of the miracles, all of the pillar of fire by night, the pillar of cloud by day, And yet it led to them losing sight of God and led to idolatry. Exodus 32 in verse 1. Exodus 32 in verse 1. It's hard to imagine that it got to this point, but here they put a lot of stock in Moses and what he was doing, but they forgot who the true deliverer was. There's a human being that was there, who's a mediator for them, and that was who they looked to. And if he was out of the picture too long, they got worried, because it wasn't as if their hope was in God who was doing it. They lost sight of who was the true deliverer. Exodus 32 and verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, so he had a few of the leaders were at the mountain, the glory of God could be seen partially in the mountain, at the top of the mountain. The people gathered together to Aaron and said, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt." Right there, where was their focus on the deliverance? Yes, God did use Moses, but their focus was on the man who had brought them out. And what happens if the man doesn't come back? Is God still working? Is he going to help us? No, we'll have to have our own God. So let's show that they looked at Moses as more than a man, but almost as a god, as an idol. "Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me." So what started that process of having to create a idol for themselves, but they lost sight of God. They put too much emphasis in the physical man. And this is ultimately what happens when we lose sight of where the blessings come from. We are blessed beyond measure in many ways. But those blessings, all good gifts come from God. And we can't lose sight. It's very important that we understand the benefit personally of being thankful. So the rest of the time I want to focus on the benefits of being thankful, how it benefits us specifically, how we benefit from remembering. For God knows he is God, we are his creation. We are the ones that need to remember. We need to realize where we are in comparison. And that is for our benefit. When we are giving thanks to God, when we worship God, even every week, that is for our benefit. God does not need to be patted on the back, so to speak. We need to recognize and keep things into perspective, who we are in comparison to God. It's helpful to us. It's helpful for our mindset. There are benefits to having this overall mindset. Psalm 92 in verse 1. Psalm 92 in verse 1, "It is good to give thanks to the Lord." Is it good for God to give thanks to God? No, it's saying it's good for us. It's good for us to give thanks to the Lord. "And to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your loving kindness in the morning and your faithfulness every night, on an instrument of 10 strings, on the lute, on the harp, with harmonious sounds. For you, Lord, have made me glad through your work. I will triumph in the work of your hands. O Lord, how great are your works! Your thoughts are very deep. A senseless man does not know, nor does a fool understand this." We know that a fool says there is no God, there is no creator. "When the wicked spring up like grass, and when all the workers of iniquity flourish, it is that they may be destroyed forever. But you, Lord, are on high forever." So God is God, and we are the work of his hand. It is good for us. It is good for us to give thanks to the Lord. And we think about this every week when we come to services. We're here to worship God. And we Think about the songs. We don't just sing hymns to sing hymns. It is because we are thinking about how great God is compared to ourselves. We need him in every way, and we give thanks to our Creator, and we are to put things back into perspective. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Now, God doesn't need to rest. He created this for us. It's a benefit to us. We're rejuvenated physically and spiritually each week. It's something we need. It's a benefit to us. It's the same for worshiping God. We come to services. We worship our Creator. It is good for us. It is good that we recognize that. The blessings that God gives us, the commands that he gives us to meet here as a holy convocation, it is for our benefit. It's for our mindset. It's good for us to have that thankful mindset. Philippians 4 and verse 6. Philippians 4 and verse 6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. Anxious for nothing. I think we live in a world where it's almost an epidemic as far as anxiety, depression, fear, anxiety, worry, doubt, anxiety. It is something that is very prevalent. And yet we're told to be anxious for nothing, but in everything with prayer, supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And what is the result of having this attitude of thankfulness and prayer and supplication? And the peace of God, this is a peace that comes from God. This is not just any peace that we have. This is a peace, a divine peace that comes from God, a peace of mind that we can have that surpasses all understanding, and it will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. What a benefit. I mean, what can we place on the value of that, the peace of mind that comes from God himself? There's an article on the Daily Health Post website entitled, How Complaining Physically Rewires Your Brain to Be Anxious and Depressed. Kind of a long title. How Complaining Physically Rewires Your Brain to Be Anxious and Depressed. And it shows the more of the scientific research that was done regarding complaining and how it directly affects the level of anxiety that we have, as overall mindset that affects us in a physical way. One excerpt from this article quotes Rick Hansen, PhD, a psychologist and senior fellow of the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley. He says, negativity is a downward spiral, meaning that the more you focus on problems instead of solutions, you eventually start to see the negative side of everything in your life. And talking about the individual that I worked with, it's like he took that hook, line, and sinker. It's a slippery slope. If a mind starts going down that road of negativity, it's very easy to everything is going to become negative. And if you think about, you know, just our personal lives, I mean, can we go a day without saying anything critical or complaining? I started thinking about this in preparing, but it is very hard if you think about it. Even this morning, Katie brought me a cup of coffee out of the blue. I tasted it. Oh, this is awful. What's in here? Is this? Oh, here I go again. You know, it's like little things. But if it's on our mind, we'll start probably catching, even in the small areas, boy, I complain a little bit. At least that is in my own, you know, for me, myself. I see there's areas to work on. It's very challenging. But it is a slippery slope. It says, while bouts of negative thinking happen on and off, it's important to quickly move on to solutions. And it's really worth doing. For one, Negativity physically destroys your brain. People who routinely experience chronic stress, particularly acute, even traumatic stress, release the hormone cortisol, which literally eats away almost like an acid bath at the hippocampus, which is a part of the brain that is very engaged in visual spatial memory, as well as memory for context and setting. Plus, negative thinking reinforces neural pathways associated with that emotion, eventually making it an automatic reaction. The same can be said of any repetitive thought or action. And that is what I thought is interesting. You start forming these neural pathway ruts in your brain where it can start going there almost by default. And you think about what we're told to meditate on, a focused thinking. We are to have a focused thinking where, no, I'm not going to allow that. I'm going to directly focus and meditate on things that are uplifting, praiseworthy, of good report, to form a new pathway and to form a new rut, because you want, you know, that can almost become more of the default, is thinking in the positive. But it takes effort to reroute what is going on. I also don't want to dumb it down too, where it's all just physical and science. We realize that, you know, a negative attitude, it is a spiritual thing. You know, the fruit of God's Spirit, of love and joy and peace and patience, self-control, you know, self-control being a fruit of God's Spirit, that is a spiritual thing. But it is good to understand what it does to us in a physical way, and it can affect us in a physical way, which makes Philippians 4 and verse 8, we'll go on to verse 8, even that much more meaningful, why we should have a very focused thinking. Verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, of course, praiseworthy is another form of being thankful. I mean, we're giving thanks to God when we sing praises to Him during the song service. And many of the hymns that we sing are giving thanks to God, giving praise to Him. Anything that's praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Think about this. Purposefully think about this. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. Again, this peace that comes from God, it's a true blessing. And it comes directly from this focused way of thinking, thankfulness, meditating on things that are of praiseworthy material. Colossians 3 and verse 12 also reiterates this. Colossians 3 and verse 12. Well, actually, a little further down, but we'll start in verse 12. Colossians 3. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on these particular attributes. Put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule your hearts. So again, there it is, a peace of God ruling our hearts, in which you were called in one body, and be thankful. So along with the same lines of having a peace of God rule our hearts, it correlates to thankfulness. And it goes on and explains it a little bit more. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. Of course, think about Sabbath services every week and what we're doing, giving thanks to God, praiseworthy. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Again, it is the attitude of thankfulness that reiterates its context of having a peace that comes from God to rule our hearts, that combats directly anxiety, is to get our mind off of ourselves, to give thanks to our Creator God, and to keep things into perspective. That is a benefit to us. It's a benefit for our mind, our overall mental health, we would say. Psalms 100 in verse 1. It's a beautiful attitude that is being shown here. Psalm 100 in verse 1. And it should be how we approach each week, a mindset of being in God's presence as we look forward to church services. Psalms 100 in verse 1. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. This is rejoicing. We want to be excited to be here every week. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who has made us, not we ourselves. Again, keeping things in perspective, realizing God is God and we are a part of his creation. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. That is what we are. When we come here every week, it is as if we are coming before his gates in his courts. Be thankful to him and bless his name. For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations. Focus on his mercy. Focus on the blessing of his truths that he has given us. There's nothing short of a miracle of what we have with the calling that we have to understand God's way of life and for him to open our mind. And we should think about this and how his truth will endure to all generations, but we are a part of that. And it's a blessing. His calling is a blessing. We think about that. Psalm 84 in verse 1. Psalm 84 and verse 1. And we sing these psalms in the services. We sing these. And, one individual who was new to the church, I remember asking me, why do you all sing songs that are only from Bible scriptures? Why not just do other? Why do you do that? You know, what is better than the Psalms that really paint the right attitude to have before God? How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts. How lovely is your dwelling. How lovely is your tabernacle. My soul longs, yes, even faints for the courts of the Lord. You know, it speaks to the heart. The Psalms speak to what our heart should be in coming before God. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God, blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will still be praising you. Selah. Think about this. Pay attention to this. Selah. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. What a blessing it is to be in God's courts, to be in his house, to dwell with him. Drop down to verse 10. And we apply this to our calling and what he has brought us here, that he has invited us here. For a day in your courts is better than 1,000. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wickedness. And you think about where we were before God opened our minds, and it is as if we spent thousands of days not being in his house, and then he calls us to this great privilege to dwell in his courts. One day is better than 1,000 without. And yet, week after week, we are allowed to come before him with songs of praise to show honor to him and to be fed each week. But it is interesting, we are to come before him with thanksgiving, to have the right perspective, to keep things in perspective. It is for our benefit. But as was what was mentioned before, idolatry is what unthankfulness ultimately leads to. It ends up being a relationship apart from God and a false God that it leads to worshiping. Romans 1 in verse 20. It is so important that we do recognize that and keep that in perspective. Romans 1 and verse 20. In the early chapters of Romans, Paul shows the sinfulness of all men, both Gentiles and Jews. What does he explain here? Starting in verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. The creation of the world reveals to us, and we do not have a excuse. God is relevant. God is there. We can't ignore that. And that's why it does say only a fool, you know, says there is no God. Man is without excuse. We can look around, even some of the, especially as scientific data becomes even more prevalent, it just reveals more about how there is this a divine creator. And the sun, I believe, is something like 93 million miles away, and we receive something like 1/1,000,000,000th of that heat. And it's just amazing to think about the perspective. Why do things orbit the way they do? Why doesn't the Earth just bounce around? Why? What's with the law of gravity? Why do things do what they do? Who set these laws in place? And you read in Job and about the details of who's responsible for this. But only a fool says there is no God. The creation allows that there man is without excuse. Verse 21, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. So the fool says there is no God. One who is unthankful becomes a fool in that way. Their foolish hearts are darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Verse 22. And changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. We'll start worshiping the creation instead of the creator. Why? What was the root of that? They did not glorify him and were not thankful. They were not thankful. And that is ultimately what a lack of thankfulness leads to, idolatry. One can become I have received all these blessings by my hand. They can be their own idol. They can be their own God. But either way, it's very important that we recognize the Creator as the one who provides all blessings. And in any family, no matter who they are, no matter what they are, no family is perfectly thankful in all ways. There's always work to be done. There's nobody that is immune from complaining. It happens. It's just that we should be striving to do the very best that we can in setting the example. Every family, every household, nobody is 100% thankful all the time. But it's something we strive as parents, as grandparents, and in child rearing, and in raising children, raising youth. It starts with the parents. It starts with the grandparents and the example that they see. It starts with what happens behind closed doors. What do they hear behind closed doors? And we, of course, the youth in the church, everybody for the longest time is, how can we help the youth build that relationship with God? How can we keep them here in the church? They're a blessing. They're the future of the church. And part of that, ultimately, that is going to become a decision of their own. Obviously, that is their choice is going to be their choice. They are ultimately going to have to make that decision. But we want to do the very best that we can in forming a platform and a foundation. And part of that starts with the encouragement or complaining about certain things. We could find fault in so many things. Even wonderful events, winter family weekends. We love winter family weekend. But we could find little details to complain about. I would do this better. I think this is what I don't like that this happened. It would be easy to do so. But we have to be careful with what our angle is on certain things and what we're setting the example with, even behind closed doors. But at the very minimum, in any child rearing, and at the very minimum, we all strive to teach our children, grandchildren, you know, say please and thank you. Say thank you. Be thankful. At the very minimum, we strive to teach them to give thanks. So I want to go into a little, for the remainder of the time, just a little bit of the details of, I want to go over 4 points on some details or areas that we can specifically teach children. Obviously, it's really all of us. You know, these points are for all of us. But it's areas to even be cognizant of that would be helpful even with youth, with the children. Point number one is verbal recognition. Verbal recognition. So obviously the easiest form, I guess, and one they can see very easily, is sincere thankfulness. You know, verbally saying, not be afraid to say thank you. If we're at a restaurant and a server provides exceptional service, just, I really appreciate your help. You've done a great job. Thank you very much. You know, being able for them to see that. Or at a supermarket, you know, if the bagger carefully packs your groceries, say thanks. You know, appreciate that. And if they don't pack them well, then punch them in the arm. I think that's the way it goes. But no. See, I forgot that we're webcasting. You know, now I have to, somebody is going to edit that and get myself in trouble there. No. But of course we don't do that. Of course we don't. But when your children, they get their homework done, you know, without grumbling or complaining, give them reinforcement. Thank you for having such a good attitude. Here's $100. See, I did that for you all, kids. That was a yeah. Jonathan's really happy about that one. All right, okay, got myself in trouble on that one. Now that, you know, we want to try to teach children to be thankful. Now, there's some children who have received financial support and scholarships from the church for summer camps. And there are some children who have gone to the pastor and said, you know, thank you. And they recognize where that was coming from. I wouldn't have been able to attend otherwise. And there's some that have not said a word, you know, maybe they just expect it, or maybe they didn't realize, or maybe this wasn't being taught. Children must be taught to give thanks and to say thanks. Point number two, positive body language. Positive body language. Our body language can say an awful lot without saying anything at all. So, you know, our shoulders are, you know, we're in line, we're waiting. You know, what does that show? That we are just so happy to be here. We're really not annoyed with everybody that's around us, or you know, we can really say a lot by not saying anything at all. Frown on our face. You know, what does it mean to give a smile, to look somebody in the eyes? It can say a lot without saying anything. It even make one feel thankful or not. Point number three: handwritten notes. You know, this is one that is really important. There's something about a handwritten note. It just seems to take, wow, they took the time to sit down, they thought of me, and to say thank you. This could be between husband and wife, you know, thank you, leaving it on their laptop before work, or, you know, anything, a little note, thank you for all you do, I really appreciate it. It can be a real example for children. Even as a father doing it to the children, that is, it means a lot coming from a father to have a handwritten note. I do understand that, you know, accidents happen. Somebody may do something for us and we're so thankful and we go buy the thank you card and we put it on the mantle and we have every intention and then time goes by. We're like, now it's 5 months late. This is just going to be offensive if I send it. Maybe I'm the only one that has done that, but it's like, you know, so of course we're merciful to one another, and those things happen, but we strive to, and, you know, I've heard some of the youth or younger generation say, well, that's something, you know, that's something my parents or grandparents, I don't do that, that's kind of awkward, you know, But you know, it's not just to do it because it's a tradition in the church. It's because it's a benefit to us doing it. It's not just the wife's job to write a thank you card. You know, the husband can write a thank you card. And it's good for the one doing it. It's good for us doing that, to sit down and to write it out. And it puts us in the right frame of mind. And point number four, service. There are different acts of service that we can do to show appreciation to one another. You know, you can prepare your husband's favorite meal, hint, hint, if they want. No, I mean, just teasing on that. But, you know, men can buy flowers for their wives, a little note out of the blue, thank you for all you do. Just acts of service. Recently, a couple weeks ago, or maybe it's been three, but I was helping a family move. And I thought it was really nice of what the individual did for one of the teens that decided to try to help as well. And she called his mother ahead of time and found out what his favorite snack was, because he was helping her and she wanted to have something special. Well, it was ribeye steak. And no, it was it was little beef sticks, I guess, as his favorite snack. So she had those waiting for him. And it was just a nice little gesture that said, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing today. And there's different ways you can be creative, showing appreciation for one another's, for one another's help. And this is something, you know, that we can strive as parents, grandparents, really good for anybody to think about. But it's setting an example. And after all, I mean, yes, we want our children to be thankful. God wants his children to be thankful. We are God's children. And he is helping us to hopefully be more thankful, to recognize the abundance that he has provided us. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6. And we think about a cheerful giver. And, you know, God is a cheerful giver. He is the one who gives us all good things. All the increase comes from him. Verse 6 of chapter 9 in 2 Corinthians, but I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he possesses in his heart, not grudgingly or out of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. God helps us in that area, and the abundance that we receive. Verse 10, now may he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for the food supply and multiply the seed of what you've sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. So not only does God increase us in a physical way, but even the fruits of righteousness, God is the one that helps those things increase. And what we sow, he is the one that provides all abundance. And it is something that we should recognize, but should also, the end result should be one of thankfulness. Verse 11, while you are enriched in everything for all liberality, which causes thanksgiving through us to God. The recognition of the abundance that he provides should lead us to thanksgiving, for which causes thanksgiving through us to God. So this is ultimately what we are striving to come to a point to recognize God and all that he does for us. Two final scriptures to conclude. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 18. This is the scripture we're all very familiar with, very easy to understand, very difficult to apply, but in exhorting the brethren here and talking about, as we draw closer to the end of time, I guess we would say, the day of the Lord, what it says, starting in verse 16, rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks. For this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. In everything, give thanks. That is not easy. There are certain trials that people face. They did not ask for that circumstance. But is there anything that they can be thankful through it? I always think about the article in Life Open Truth. It was an article of two women, Corey and Betsy, who arrived at the Ravensbrück concentration camp in the fall of 1944. And the article goes on in detail about, you know, what the conditions that they were living in. It was described as filthy, smelly, overcrowded. I mean, it's a concentration camp. And so, you know, why would anyone try to find anything to be thankful for in that situation? And yet they were allowed, I guess, or they confiscated a Bible or whatever, but they did, they read the 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 18. They were trying to apply this. What can we be thankful for? And they were, you know, it was heavily infested, the room was, with fleas that bit them. And they came to the conclusion that they were thankful for fleas because it was such a horrible infestation that the prison or the guards, soldiers, they would not cross through the threshold and abuse them. And so they were very thankful for the fleas because it was keeping abuse, further abuse, away from them. So they tried and strived to give thanks even in a difficult situation. Another example and final scripture I'd like to conclude with is in Luke 17, a difficult situation, but striving to be thankful in all situations. Luke 17 and verse 11. And here we have 10 lepers that were healed. And you think, and one, as we recall, one gave thanks. We think, well, why was that a difficult situation? Why wouldn't that have been easy? You know, here they were all healed. Wouldn't that be a good thing, a positive thing? Why only one? Why was that difficult for them to give thanks? Why did only one? Luke 17 and verse 11. Now it happened as he went to Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. Then as he entered a certain village, there met him 10 men who were lepers who stood afar off. And they lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. So when he saw them, he said to them, go show yourselves to the priests. And so it was that as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, returned and with a loud voice glorified God and fell down on his face at his feet, giving thanks, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And that is the key. He was a Samaritan. And the history of Samaritans and the Jews, there was heated conflict. One source says that both Jewish and Samaritan religious leaders taught that it was wrong to have any contact with the opposite group, and neither was to enter each other's territories or even to speak to one another. So there was a level of peer pressure here. It was very strong. And for one to branch out of that and say, thank you, that was actually quite a big move. And to do this loudly for a Samaritan to give thanks to a Jew. So no matter what the circumstances, we should try to find something that we can be thankful with. It may not be that particular trial, obviously, but we still should find things that we can be thankful with despite. Helen Keller is quoted saying, I thank God for my handicaps, for through them I have found myself, my work, and my God. As we know, she was born blind and deaf, that she could allow that trial to overcome her, overwhelm her. But she's quoted, I thank God for my handicaps, for through them I have found myself, my work, and my God. There are certain situations, circumstances we did not ask for, but how will we approach them? What will our overall mindset be? H.U. Westermeyer said that the pilgrims, quoted saying, the pilgrims made 7 times more graves than huts. No Americans have been more impoverished than these who nevertheless set aside a day of thanksgiving. giving thanks in difficult circumstances. One more quote, Melody Beattie says, "Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos to order, confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, a stranger into a friend. Gratitude makes sense of our past, brings peace for today, and creates a vision for tomorrow." There's no doubt that we are drawing closer to Christ's return as we look around. We live in a world that is full of unthankfulness. Just by not having that disputing and complaining attitude, we truly can be a light in this world, which is what we have been called to do. We must be careful not to give in to that sway, that peer pressure that is out there. If we learn to be thankful, we will receive a peace of mind that only comes from God, a divine peace which we all desire. Thankfulness is not only a command from God, it's a blessing for all those who strive to be thankful to God. Striving to be thankful, remaining thankful in an unthankful world.